We're going to start something new. But before we start something new, I have to introduce you to something. Probably the most valuable thing that is currently in my office. As a matter of fact, I couldn't do my job without it. Somebody astutely called the toys that line the shelves in my office thinking toys this morning. And, well, I have one that is, well, if Lexus knew how valuable it was, it would be like in a glass case, because nothing would ever get done without that. If you don't understand what it is, it's a squishy stress ball in the shape of a porcupine. Why it's a porcupine is a different story for a different time, but the point is that when you do things for a living that cause you to have to think, sometimes even though you've got all the facts right in front of you, you get stuck. And so when I get stuck, this little thing sits right underneath my monitor, and I'll pull it out and I'll start squeezing it and turn it upside down and squishing it and playing with it and squeezing his nose and playing with it and staring at the screen as I'm going about it. And eventually, as I work through it, the answer comes to me. And so it's important that we understand that everybody gets stuck at some point in their life. And today we're going to start a series about a man named Lee Strobel. Now, Lee Strobel was a phenomenal investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune. And he had a problem that caused him to get stuck. His wife became a Christian. And he was an atheist. Now, there's a problem. Because all of a sudden, this person that you've committed to share your life with now has a completely different belief system that you don't agree with. And so, Lee Strobel put himself on a mission. That mission was to go out and rescue his wife from her faith by proving it's all a lie. It is, in the words of our Avenue Q people, pointless. It's just a myth. And we're going to follow his adventure across 4 weeks, so we're going to really condense it, and we're going to take some big hops as we're going. But this morning, I want to start you with a clip right there when Lee Strobel has all the evidence at his fingertips. But folks, he's stuck.
What are you doing here? I thought you were banished. Hey, what's the matter?
You people and your God, you just, you know, you talk in circles. You offer just enough evidence, but never enough to be conclusive. Then you fill in all the gaps with, oh, well, yeah, you just got to have faith. It's a bunch of nonsense.
You're really irritating. You know that?
Don't start with me, Kenny.
You don't waste a lick of time bragging to all of us how great a reporter you are. So why can't you put up or shut up on this story?
What are you even talking about?
Here's where the chili meets the cheese, my friend. One of my heroes was C.S. Lewis, a man who began as a skeptic, much like yourself. At the end of his journey, you know what he said? He said, if Christianity is false, it's of zero importance. But if it's true, there's nothing more important in the entire universe. So you want your wife back? Well, hey, guess what? People in hell want ice water. Not everybody gets everything they want. Stop blaming me and the church and God. And do your job. Stack up the evidence, follow the facts, and write the story, win or lose.
So here's the problem with where Strobel found himself. He had already decided the conclusion of his story before he ever really did any of the investigation. You see, he started his premise with the idea that it is all pointless. There is nothing to this Christianity thing. And all I have to do is just do a little digging, a little poking, a little prodding, a little investigating. Then first thing you know, I'm going to be able to pull. It's like pulling a thread on a sweater. You pull the first one, and as you keep pulling the first one, you keep pulling, what happens to the sweater? It all unravels. He was so certain that all he had to do was pull that first thread that, you know what, it'll all come apart and it'll all be done and I can go and I can save my wife from this life of faith. And here's the problem. I like that statement where the chili meets the cheese. He did all the investigation and, well, the facts didn't tell him the story that he wanted. Now, I'm going to do a plug right here for our Wednesday night class. There is going to be a Wednesday night class that goes along with this sermon series. And this is what you kind of call an iceberg lesson series. Meaning, I'm going to give you the tip just enough to wet your whistle and make you go, And then if you really want to dig into the evidence, that's Rich's job on Wednesday night. So the two parts are going to fit together for the next 4 weeks. So if you really want to see the full story and the evidence, then the Wednesday night class is a great place for you to start digging. But I am here this morning to ask you, have you ever had a conversation like that, or have you ever been like that, where you are just stuck in your faith? Now, you might ask, what do you mean by stuck? What is a sticking point? Well, every single person eventually gets to a point in their faith, in their belief, where they are investigating the evidence and they're just stuck. They can just go no further. And when they determine their sticking point, it's just like me sitting at the monitor and I'm looking at that problem and I know what they want and the clock is ticking and I got a due date and I need something to help me get unstuck. Now, at work, it's my little stress ball. Unfortunately, we don't have a, quote, spiritual stress ball that we can just hand people and let them mull over in their head until they get unstuck. We have to offer something else. And the problem is that we get, well, we're kind of a one-trick pony. We think everybody is stuck at the same point, and so we kind of try to treat everybody the same way, and we have all the evidence, and we have all the proof, and we understand who Jesus is, but all we understand is how to preach to them. And honestly, it's not working. I mean, I can't preach you into heaven. I wish I could. I can't preach you into a relationship. But what I have to do is I have to do exactly what happened with Mr. Strobel. And at some point, I have to drop back and I have to figure out, where are you stuck? What is your sticking point in this faith thing? And then I have to meet you where you are. So this morning, I want to identify and talk about four spiritual sticking points that everybody has along their life. And so the first one is, well, I can't believe it. John chapter 20, verse 24 through 25, we meet a man that was like this. His name was Thomas. Now Thomas, also known as Didymus, of one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." Now keep in mind what they're telling Thomas is not possible. Why? Because it's been about a week or so that since they watched the crucifixion. Since Jesus was nailed on a cross and was beaten and suffered and was placed in a tomb and was left there with a rock over in front of it, sealed up by the government of Rome. And so what they are now telling Thomas is flat out not physically possible. And I just have to love, and remember, Thomas is one of the 12. He's one of the ones that had been with Jesus since the beginning, and you have to love his response. But he said to them, so now he's talking to the other 11, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe." You ever met people like this? Man, you can talk to your blue in the face and you can pour out all of the facts and figures, and they're like, "I don't believe it because I can't believe it." And when you say that, we have to remember there are many stories in the Bible that are hard to believe. Let me just give you a few. Feeding 5,000 people with just a few loaves of bread and a couple of fish. That's kind of unbelievable. I've watched my kids eat. I can't feed them sometimes with a couple pounds of steak, let alone 5,000 people. How about parting the Red Sea? Man, we hear that story. That's a staple. We teach it all the way back when the kids are little about Moses parting the Red Sea. You ever think about the physics it would take to do that? That's darn near impossible. How about this one? Walking on water. Now, when I was real little, I didn't know how to swim. I still know how to swim. But I decided one time that I knew how to swim. We were down at Camp Brothers. And I decided I knew how to swim. And so I just jumped off the side of the pool. And you know what I did? I sank. You know why? Because people aren't designed to walk on water. It doesn't happen. That's why we have boats and rafts and other things that go in the water. That's why they make jet skis and they make little other things. Because you're not designed to walk on water. How about this one? The sun standing still in the sky. That's a hard one to swallow because I understand how the sun works. And if the sun stands still in the sky, then that means that the earth has to stop moving across around the sun. And I know what physics says when that happens, that if the earth stopped moving around the sun, then you know an object that is in motion tends to stay in motion unless it's operated on by an equal or opposite motion. Well, that's just Newton's law, first law of motion. And guess what that means? If the earth stops, so the earth stands still, then that means I keep moving. And that means there would be nobody. So this is all hard to believe. I mean, we talk about these things, and we have a fancy church name for them. We call them miracles. You know, and I understand God is God, and God can do whatever He wants. And we use these stories to show God's power and control over nature. And to us, the people that sit in the church people, this all makes perfectly good sense. Why? What did Strobel say? Because you just explain it all away by you got to have faith. How many times have you ever said that to somebody? And they looked at you like you had two heads. Because you're asking me to believe the impossible. Sometimes these sensational stories become logical sticking points for people out in the world. They defy logic. They defy nature. They defy everything that we know that science says this is how things work. And this is where we meet Thomas. Unlike the other 11 that were all excited and were all there and all present when Jesus showed up, the other 11 had physical proof of who Jesus was. How? Because they were there when He walked through the wall. He had already held out His hand to them. They had already seen the marks. They had seen the side. They had seen everything. When they say, "We have seen the Lord." And Thomas didn't get that benefit. And so Thomas is like, "That's real nice. I don't know what you guys have been doing, but I wasn't here. And so you know what? I'm just not going to believe it. I can't. What you're telling me isn't possible. I need you to give me some concrete evidence. As a matter of fact, this is how far I'm willing to go. Unless Thomas, can put my hand into those nail prints and I can touch that side, I'm not going to." So he didn't want to just see it. He wanted to touch it, feel it, experience it. Thomas wanted everything that the world is asking for today. Don't you wish you could just provide it for him sometimes? I mean, how do you talk to a person that just wants physical evidence? Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 13 says, "You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart." So here's what I need you to see. Although he did not believe their story, they encouraged Thomas to keep seeking. They encouraged Thomas to just keep watching, just keep looking, just keep examining what I'm putting down in front of you. No, I can't give you right now the physical evidence. I can't hold Jesus' hand out for you right now. But look, just keep watching. And you know what? In time, God provided for Thomas exactly what he needed to believe. God provided for Thomas that physical evidence that he needed. And whatever it is, put somebody at this sticking point. I just can't accept what I'm seeing. I can't believe it. Understand, our job at this point is not to preach to them, because all we're going to do is just convince them that we've lost our mind. I've got three heads instead of two. I'm a monster. They don't understand. They don't get it. What we need to do is we need to encourage them to keep watching. Encourage them to keep looking. And you understand what I have to encourage them to watch, because Jesus is not going to walk back. Well, maybe He will. I don't know. But that's not the way it's been working for a few thousand years. What we're encouraging them to watch is we're encouraging them to watch us. And so that puts all the pressure on my life. That if I'm going to win the person that just can't believe because what I'm saying seems unbelievable, then when they look at my life, they have to see a life that's unbelievable. But a life that's working in the world here and now. See, it isn't about preaching the word to these people. It's about letting them see it in action in my life. Man, that's a lot harder case to make. It's a lot easier if I can just hand them a piece of paper as I'm walking down the road and give them a track or quote a Bible verse to them or something like that. When I ask you, say, look, you want to see Jesus? Follow my life with me. Look at my life. No, I'm not going to live it perfectly, but look at how it works in my life. God works it all out. And we need to understand, we have to just keep telling people, keep watching, keep looking. So what about the second spiritual sticking point? This is one we run about quite a bit. I don't want to believe. This is what it says in John chapter 3, verses 18 through 21. Whoever believes in Him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already, because they have not believed in the name of God, God's one and only Son. This is the verdict. Again, I like that answer, because verdict means it's the final answer. There isn't a discussion. Light has come into the world, but people loved darkness. Yeah, we just read this verse when we were going through the creeds. I was setting you up. I hate to tell you that. People love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be seen plainly that what they have done has been done in the sight of God. Now, these people are a little harder than the I can't believe it because you can't let me touch it people. These people are harder because you know what? They do not believe because to express belief will require me to change my life. The moment that I take God at His word and I say that faith is real and God is real and Jesus is real, then you understand what that means for my life. It was the quote. You know what? If Christianity is false, it's pointless. Let's go play golf on Sunday morning. Let's go for Sunday drives. Let's go do something else. If Christianity is false, there is absolutely no point to us being here on Sunday mornings. But if it's true, then there is nothing in your life that's more important. There is no relationship that will ever give you purpose. But the problem is, to accept that relationship means I have to change what I believe. And that's a big sticking point. See, they see the light. They know it's there. However, something in their life is causing them to seek the darkness. They're like, I hate to use this analogy, but like little cockroaches. Cockroaches, when you turn the light on, what do? They scurry for the darkness. They don't want you to see what they're doing. And for people that just don't want to believe simply because they don't want to change, that's exactly what they're doing. And that's hard. See, because I can't preach their darkness away. There is no argument I can make. There is no sermon outline I can put together. There is no scripture I can quote to them that's ever going to give them this light bulb moment to say, ah, I got it. I understood it. Right at that point, they're never going to have that clear moment where darkness turns to light. And I like clear moments. I'm a ones and zero kind of guy. It's an off or an on. It's a black or a white. Notice my outfit this morning? There is no middle part of this. See, the only way to reach these people is I just have to consistently leave the light on. Matthew chapter excuse me, Matthew chapter 5, verse 16 says, "In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." I have to just keep leaving my light on. Now, I realize my kids love to hear, they want to get this recording because I'm always telling my kids at home, turn the light out. It drives me crazy to walk into a room. There's nobody there and the TV's going and the light's on and the lamp's on. Just drives me. That's probably because I pay the electric bill. It's got to have something to do with that. But for these people, I just have to keep leaving my light on so they can come back and keep experiencing the light. I can't just preach at them. It's not going to work. And once again, how is the light left on? My life. You see, it's got to come alive for people at some point. At some point, if we're going to establish a case for Christ, then you know what? My life is going to have to betray the evidence of Christ. So, what about spiritual sticking point number three? Now, I like these people. These are my kind of people. These are the ones that I think God should put thousands of these people into my life because I know what to do with these people. Here it is. Acts chapter 8, verses 26 through 31. "Now an angel of the Lord said to Philip, Go south to the road, the desert road, that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza. So he started out, and on the way he met an Ethiopian eunuch, an important official in charge of all the treasury of Kenakia, which means queen of the Ethiopians. This man had gone to Jerusalem to worship, and on his way home he was sitting in his chariot, reading the book of Isaiah the prophet. The Spirit told Philip, 'Go to that chariot, stay near it.' Then Philip ran up to the chariot and heard the man reading Isaiah the prophet. 'Do you understand what you were reading?' Philip asked. 'How can I?' he said. 'Here you go. Unless someone explains it to me.' So he invited Philip to come and sit with him." Man, we're looking for these kind of people. These are the people that, man, they just spin my wheel. Because you know what? Here was an Ethiopian eunuch. And notice, he was already interested in God. Somebody had already left the light on for him. Somebody had already been there for him. Somebody had already done all of the hard work. And there he is. He's sitting in the chariot. He's all primed to go. And I want you to see what he's doing. He was stuck because he didn't really understand. I mean, he was there. He was reading Scripture. And he was worshiping God. So he just came from Jerusalem. But he's doing all of this. And he doesn't have a clue why he's doing it. But somebody told him, this will give your life purpose. And so you know what? Here we are. And now he's sitting here and, well, he needs some explanation. Now, I want to tell you something. I got a lot of explanation. Man, come out to lunch and I can explain a lot of things. We'd start turning pages of Scripture and, man, we can explain a lot of things. But you have to at least be to that point where you're willing to listen. We have to get people that are stuck here the ability, just like this man says, tell me please, in verse 34, who is the prophet talking about? Himself or someone else? This man had a genuine interest in knowing, what is this all about? What is the point? And Philip's like, I can do that. That's easy. Here is where preaching and teaching begin to play the major role. But not until you find somebody stuck at this point. If they're not to the point that they're not ready to listen, then you know what? Preaching and teaching just is going to drive them away and not bring them close. Preaching and teaching is going to make them think that you're a hypocrite because then they're going to point all the problems in your life and, yeah, I got problems. But once they're ready to listen, once God gets them to this point, once somebody else left the light on, once somebody else entered into their life and showed them that, once somebody else convinced them that it wasn't just some sensational stories, then here it is. This is the harvest. This is the ones that are ripe for the picking. Why aren't we reaching these? Maybe it's because we're not spending enough time in sticking point one and two to get people to this point. You see, we have to work hard to get people ready to listen to us, ready to ask the questions. My life has to say something to them. Here's where the man, here we meet the man right where he is. Philip came up to his chariot, and what do you say? What you reading? Really? Isaiah? Man, that's a good book. I'd have read that thing a bunch of times. Do I know what it's about? If you got some time, what'd the man say? Climb on up in the chariot. Because after Philip climbed in that chariot, he brought the man forward to the point where he was ready to follow. And when they finished the story, what did the eunuch say to Philip? Look, here's water. Why can't I get baptized? Now you understand, they made the leap from Isaiah, if you've ever read the book of Isaiah, it can be a very confusing book. Somehow on a chariot ride, Philip made the leap from Isaiah all the way to baptism. And I don't know how long that chariot ride was, but I want to tell you something. The man was ready to listen, and Philip filled the void. And he closed the deal to the point that the man saw water and said, you know what? I understand the point, and I'm ready to follow. That's an incredible story, but we have to get people to these points. So what about spiritual sticking point number four? Now, I would just like to tell you, these are the people that frustrate me. Okay? Now, when I say they, I mean, I'm just telling you they frustrate me. More than the person that says, I want you to give me physical evidence. More than the person that says, you know what, I just don't want to change my life. I don't get frustrated by the person that says, I want to follow, just explain what I'm reading here. But these people absolutely, positively frustrate me. I believe, isn't that enough? John chapter 1, verses 10 through 12 says, He was in the world, and though the world was made through Him, the world did not recognize Him. He came to that which was His own, but His own did not receive Him. Yet to all who did receive Him, to those who believe in His name, He gave the right to become children of God. So these people frustrate me because they are the most difficult people to get unstuck. You're like, really? More than the person that doesn't want to change? Oh, no. The person that doesn't want to change their life? Just wait. First crisis that enters that person's life, the first phone call they get that something's falling apart, the first time that something really just rocks their world, they're going to remember where the light is, and they're going to come to you. So those people, you can, but these people I don't get. You see, they have a belief and they think it's enough to have just an intellectual belief. You know, I could sit them down and give them a test on the Bible, and they could score an A. I could put them in a contest like Jeopardy, and I could put them up here and show all the categories, and they could go through and they could answer all of the questions and walk away with all of the prize money. They could quote Scripture, sing hymns, sit in pews, act the part. And it's all just literally in their head. And since they have a belief, they believe that's enough. That's as far as I'll ever have to go with this. I believe I'm a good person. I never killed anybody. And my belief is enough. And James says, you know what? That's hogwash. James chapter 2, verse 19 says, You believe that there is one God? Good. Demons believe that and shudder. That's kind of harsh. Yeah, but you realize that's where you are. If everything is all stuck up in your head, then that is exactly where you are. You're at the point that it's all there and you have all the facts. But you know what? You're missing part of the equation. You see, it's believe plus receive equals become. That's the equation that's out on our sign and will be there until Easter. Believe plus receive equals become. Go back to the Ethiopian eunuch. Philip gave him all the information from the book of Isaiah, and he didn't look at Philip and say, "That's nice. I can accept everything you told me. I can believe in this Jesus guy. Okay, we're all good. Thank you very much for explaining to me, Philip." Nuh-uh. Not the way it happened. Philip explained it all, and then he said, "Oh my goodness, I believe it. Now I want to receive it. Here's water. What's standing between me and that receiving?" And he just let it all go. You see, these people are suffering from what I call the 12-inch rule. You know what 12 inches is, right? It's the distance between your head and your heart. If you take a rule and you held it up to your forehead and you brought it down to here, this is the thing a youth minister showed me one time. The distance always between your head and your heart is 12 inches. And these people are 12 inches short from their relationship. But once in your heart, then it becomes part of your life. Then it isn't just a trip to church on Sunday morning. It isn't a spot in the pew. It isn't a spot in the parking lot. It isn't just about what did I sing on Sunday morning. It is about what I got out of this. It is all about the relationship that I'm living in. And I want to tell you something. That's a hard sticking point. Because I know people that have sat in churches for years, and you know what? They're still stuck right at this point. It's all in their head. And there ain't nothing in their heart. And you know how you tell the difference? Because the heart produces actions. The head just produces reasons. So let me ask you something. We started this, and I told you we're going to be talking a lot about how do we reach people. So here's my question. Question number one, are you stuck? Now, let that sink in for a second. Are you stuck? Is there a point in your life where your belief has just stalled? It's stagnant. You know what? You were on a path and you were going down there and you got all the information and it's all there and you think you got all the facts, but somewhere along the way, you know what? There's just something, that last little step, that last little moment of surrender. You're just like Lee Strobel was sitting there at that desk. He just wanted to blame God for being stuck. Let me ask you something. Are you stuck? When we were talking about those sticking points, did you find yourself? Because I have really good news for you. If you're stuck, I know how to grease the wheels. I'm not here just to preach to you. I'm willing to meet you where you are. And we'll grease the wheels and see if we can move forward together. If you're all the way to the point of where the Ethiopian eunuch was and you're ready to just explain it to me, okay, we can do that right now. We're going to do a time of decision and you can come forward and we'll sit you down and I'll show you how to get from Isaiah to baptism. But understand, it's a chariot ride. You better be ready to hang on for just a little bit. If you're not to that point, and this is what I want you to do. I want you to take this lesson and I want you to stow it away in your brain. If you find yourself stuck, figure out where you're stuck at and then start looking for the light. Maybe it's the light that you just need to observe and you need to watch. I'm okay with that. Like I said, I know people that sit in churches for years. God's willing to give you the time. I'm willing to give you the time. So that's question one. Are you stuck? And if so, are you ready to get unstuck? Now, to all of those that aren't stuck, congratulations. Now I want to ask you something. Do you know somebody that is stuck? There's somebody in your life, somebody that is out there, that is right there on your shores, that's connected to you. You know them, and folks, they are stuck. And you saw those sticking points, and a name popped into your head. Man, I know somebody like that. Yeah, they irritate me too. Yeah, I know somebody that's asking the questions, and I don't know how to answer any of them right now. And here's what I'm going to ask from you. Give me 4 weeks. Well, this week plus 3 more. And don't just give me the weeks. Make yourself a commitment for 4 weeks, 7 o'clock. It'll last about an hour and a half, so you'll be done here about 8:30, depending on how many questions and answers come from the discussion. Okay? Give yourself 4 weeks. Show up here on Wednesday night, and then let the case be laid out for you. Let the light shine. Get the facts. Get the information that you need.
And I told Rich, I'm putting a lot of pressure on you. Because he said, I understand. He's got the book. He knows what's coming. Get your facts straight. And once you get your facts straight, then decide what you can go out and how you can help somebody else get their life unstuck. Once again, moving toward Christ. I mean, that's a big challenge. Yeah, it is. We're going to end this series on Good Friday. We're going to actually show the movie that all of these clips are coming from. And I'm going to give you an opportunity to invite somebody to come to that movie. We're going to give you some tickets, some free passes that you can go and say, hey, we're having a free movie night. You want to come? Because the goal is for you to take this case for Christ into a world that is not only lost, it's stuck. God has given us the information to get it unstuck.